The headlines: U.S. stocks take a plunge after Fitch Ratings Agency downgrades the country's credit rating over fiscal deterioration and the government's rising debt. The UN says more than 20 million people are experiencing high levels of acute food insecurity in Sudan. And China steps up rescue and relief operations after severe deadly floods hit northern and central parts of the country. Hello and welcome, everybody. U.S. stocks have taken a nosedive after Fitch Ratings Agency downgraded the country's credit rating by a notch from AAA to AA+. On Wednesday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average shed almost 350 points, or 1.0%, while the broad-based S&P 500 dropped 1.4%. The tech-rich NASDAQ Composite Index tumbled 2.2%. Fitch attributed the U.S. credit rating downgrade to expected fiscal deterioration over the next 3 years and the government's growing debt. This is the second time a major ratings agency has lowered U.S. rating after S&P made a similar move in 2011. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has criticized downgrade of the main U.S. credit rating, calling it entirely unwarranted. She claimed Fitch has ignored improvements in governance metrics under the Biden administration and the country's economic strength. Economic expert Paul Foote believes that the state of the U.S. economy is far worse than what the American rating agency Fitch has portrayed.
Fitch just covered some of the big negatives. They could have covered far more. I mean, for example, they pointed out that the debt keeps growing, the interest on that debt keeps growing. And to make the interest payments, you've got to print more money to make the interest payments. We have an aging population, of which I'm a good example. So you have rising amounts of Medicare and Social Security costs for which there is not enough money available. You have the Federal Reserve Bank raising interest rates in a desperate attempt to bring inflation down. You have other countries of the world dumping the dollar and no longer using it. For a long time, America was able to get away with this irresponsible behavior because communist China and some other countries would hold huge amounts of our debt. Well, they were financing us. It's like giving drugs to an addict. They were financing us and they shouldn't have been. Now that means that if the government needs to raise money, they're going to have to try to convince investors to invest more in treasury securities, which means higher interest rates to attract people to invest.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is facing an escalating series of legal challenges, with criminal charges brought against him for the third time in just 4 months. We have a report on that.
For the first time, America is set to put on trial a former president in one of the most consequential criminal cases in the country's legal history. Ex-President Donald Trump has faced criminal charges for a third time in 4 months.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
The indictment pertains to Trump's efforts to overturn his 2020 election defeat to incumbent President Joe Biden. It focuses on his actions in the two-month period between his loss to Biden and the infamous riot in Washington, D.C. During this period, Trump vehemently denied the election results, repeatedly asserting that the votes had been stolen.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
According to the indictment, Trump knowingly propagated false fraud claims and exerted pressure on state and federal officials, including Vice President Mike Pence, to manipulate the election results. When failed, Trump directed his supporters to stop certifying Biden's win. that turned into a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol, leading to 5 deaths, a move that is described as an attack on America's democracy.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy.
Trump vehemently dismisses the case as ridiculous and maintains his innocence, refuting any allegations of wrongdoing. He even goes further to accuse the prosecutors of being politically motivated, claiming they are acting on behalf of Biden to meddle in the forthcoming presidential elections in which Trump and Biden could face off again. The two are currently tied in polls. The Trump campaign has also asserted that the Tuesday indictment amounts to election interference. Nonetheless, this is not the only obstacle standing in the way of Trump's return to presidency. The Republican politician has already been charged in 2 other cases, mishandling classified files and falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to an adult film actress, the charges that have significantly hit the former president's reputation among many Americans.
I hope he goes to prison for a long time. I think he deserves to go to prison for all the crimes he committed.
Donald Trump is now due to appear in a Washington, D.C. court on Thursday. He faces 78 criminal counts overall. These charges mean the ex-president will have 3 criminal trials to attend in the next 12 to 18 months, complicating his second run for the White House.
Public confidence in the U.S. military continues to decline. A new poll has revealed that Americans' trust in the nation's defense agencies have hit its lowest point in over 2 decades. Not only has confidence in the military fallen, but the U.S. has been combating a serious shortfall in recruiting. That's in the tens of thousands.
According to a new poll, public confidence in the U.S. military continues to decline, reaching its lowest point in over 2 decades. Only 60% of Americans expressed a great deal or quite a lot of confidence in the military in a recent Gallup poll conducted from June 1st to 22nd. That's down from 64% in 2022. After the 9/11 attacks, military confidence increased and remained high at mostly above 70% for 2 decades in America, before dipping to 69% in 2021. The confidence level has further declined since then. The poll linked the decline to the United States' poorly executed withdrawals from Iraq and Afghanistan. Many analysts have also attributed the trust deficit to Washington's heavy arms supplies to Ukraine, which has been engaged in a war with Russia since last February. Last month, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Kohl acknowledged that the United States' military aid to Ukraine has placed the country's arms industry under strain. According to Kohl, Washington has provided nearly $40 billion in military assistance to Kyiv since the start of the war. Over the past 48 years, Republicans have consistently shown the highest levels of confidence in the military, but in just the past 3 years, Republican confidence plunged from 91% to 68%. Independents, who historically held moderate levels of confidence, now have the lowest trust, with public confidence dropped by 13 percentage points to 55%. Though confidence among Democrats rose after President Joe Biden took office, that gain has dissipated over the past year. The results mirror a crisis of trust in several other public institutions. The military still evokes the highest public trust among the 14 other institutions included in the poll. 5 institutions stand as the least trusted, with newspapers, the criminal justice system, television news, big business, and Congress all garnering confidence from less than 20% of Americans. Congress, in particular, registers the lowest confidence at a mere 8%.
The fall in Americans' confidence in the Army comes amid a recruitment crisis that has endangered the military preparedness. Most American youth are now reluctant to join the Army and serve the flag, but what are the reasons?
This year's confidence index reflected a 4 percentage point decline compared to last year, when an American think tank rated the U.S. military's level of capability as weak, saying it was incapable of winning a single war against arch rivals China and Russia. let alone two concurrent ones. The report prepared by the Washington-based Heritage Foundation only appraised the Marine Corps as strong, while giving the Army a marginal rating, evaluating the Space Force and Navy as weak, and finding the Air Force to be very weak. Also, with public support falling, the armed forces are struggling to fill their ranks. Leaders from the Army, Navy, and Air Force told a congressional hearing in March that they all expect to fall short of their recruitment targets this year. The children of military families make up the majority of new recruits in the U.S. military. The pipeline is now under threat, which is bad news for Pentagon's already acute recruitment problems, as well as America's military readiness. This year, the U.S. Army expects to end up about 15,000 short of its target of 65,000 recruits. But what are the underlying causes of the U.S. military recruitment crisis?
Unfortunately, only about 23% of young Americans qualify these days to go into the military, and a lot of that is about obesity. And some of it also is about just only about 9% of young Americans are interested in serving in the U.S. military. So it's a lot of things wrapped together.
According to a Pentagon study published in March, 77% of the 16 to 24-year-olds typically targeted by military recruiters are unfit for service due to lack of physical fitness, low test scores, drug use, or poor mental health. Also, experts believe that the sexual assaults that occur in U.S. military bases and the arrival of white supremacists to higher military ranks are among the most important reasons that led to the reluctance of young men to go to military service. American officials are now concerned that this trend would lead to undermining the state of preparedness of the country's military forces and may have negative repercussions on the reputation of the U.S. Army.
Moscow calls the West's upcoming peace talks on Ukraine and Saudi Arabia a farcical move intended to forge an anti-Russian coalition. Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman said it's another staged event to show the pseudo-unity of the world against Russia. Maria Zakharova added, the meeting does not seek to find political solutions, instead aims to promote Kiev's formula. She further noted that the event is, quote, bait for those countries that are honestly seeking a peaceful settlement of the Ukrainian conflict. Zakharova previously stated that the meeting would not be useless as it would help the West realize that Kiev's peace plan is a dead end. The Kremlin had also said Moscow would keep an eye on the meeting. Russia has not been invited to the Jeddah meeting, which is set to take place at this weekend. The United Nations has warned that millions of people are on the brink of famine in Sudan as hunger and displacement are spiraling out of control. In the African country, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says more than 20 million people across Sudan are facing high levels of acute food insecurity between July and September this year. According to the UN agency, 14 million Sudanese are experiencing a food crisis, and more than 6 million are now just one step from famine. The report attributes this alarming situation to the ongoing armed conflict in Sudan, which is coupled with the subsequent economic downturn and mass displacement. According to International Organization for Migration, more than 3 million people have been internally displaced since the start of the conflict. The United Nations World Food Program has also warned that more than 19 million Sudanese are facing food insecurity. Typhoon Kanun continues to wreak havoc in Japan with intense rain, fierce winds leading to more potential storm damage. Two people are confirmed dead and more than 40 others injured in Okinawa and Kagoshima prefectures. Some 166,000 households are said to be without electricity. Naha Airport in Okinawa has resumed operation after it was shut down 2 days ago. However, hundreds of flights remain canceled in southern Japan. The storm in the East China Sea is now changing direction from northwest to east toward the country's mainland. Its actual path has not been determined yet. Earlier, Typhoon Kanun also forced schools and businesses to shut in Taiwan. That says China is still reeling from deadly floods due to the heaviest rain received over consecutive days after Typhoon Doksuri lashed northern parts, including the capital Beijing. The country has stepped up rescue and relief operations. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Hidden Files. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Children's carefree laughter is one of the most heartwarming sounds in the world. Watching them run around, fall, and get back on their feet again gives us hope for life. Now, what would it be like if, instead of nice and strong skin, the children's body was covered with a layer as delicate as the wings of a butterfly? What if every little bump would mean a burning blister? How then would a child run and play and fill the world with joy? Today's program is on the plight of Iran's butterfly children, whose access to medicine is entangled with political sanctions placed on the country. But who are the butterfly children? And what exactly is their condition?
Epidermolysis bullosa is a genetic condition which affects the skin. It is caused by faults in the proteins that act as the glue which holds our layers of skin together. In EB, the slightest knock or bump causes the skin layers to separate, making blisters and wounds. Kids born with it are often called butterfly children because their skin is as fragile as the wings of a butterfly. Skin is our protection from the outside world. Skin that is working properly allows us to play, run, hug, sleep without a thought. It's not the same for people who live with EB. Walking becomes increasingly hard over time as the feet get more and more damaged. The simple joy of holding a crayon becomes difficult as the fingers fuse together. And eating is frightening as the lining of the throat blisters, sometimes causing kids to choke. In really bad cases, almost no part of the body remains untouched by EB. And people with it live with the constant threat of skin cancer. There is no cure for EB. And caring for children means agonizing 3-hour bandage changes every second day. It is a heartbreaking routine, usually done by mom or dad, and is so traumatizing it can have a devastating effect on the bond between parent and child. In fact, because EB care demands so much time, it can have a huge effect on all the family.
Living with this condition is painful enough when one has access to all the latest forms of treatment available, but there are parents and doctors around the world who are having to fight with forces beyond their biggest resources, like those who live in countries like Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, and many others. What forces are we exactly talking about? Well, we're talking about U.S.-imposed sanctions that make it nearly impossible for these patients to receive the much-needed medical supplies. And this is not only the case for EB patients in Iran. You see, one of the many requirements in living with this disease is a special type of bandage. This bandage must be able to help protect the patient's very fragile skin against any pressure that can cause it to blister. At the same time, this bandage must be made of special material so as not to stick to the patient's skin. Otherwise, in order to be changed, it has to be peeled off the EB patient, which can be extremely painful and cause terrible blisters by itself. And this special bandage is made by a Swedish company, a company that refuses to sell its products to Iranian EB patients as it fears being punished due to U.S. enforced sanctions on Iran. There were some heart-rending stories that I heard while visiting the EB home, and the NGO has sent official letters to the company requesting that the required medical supplies be sold to Iranian patients, as you see here. Yet the company's response is that it cannot be done, unfortunately, due to the U.S. economic sanctions in force. Now the question is, what remains is the legality of these sanctions internationally, and what can be done to resolve the issues faced by these patients? So to discuss this situation further, we will be joined shortly by United Nations Special Rapporteur, Dr. Elena Duhan.
Dr. Elena Duhan is the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights. She is a professor of international law. Her teaching and research concentrate on sanctions and human rights law, international law, and international environmental law. She is the author of more than 150 books and articles on international law. She has over 40 publications which focus on human rights, targeted and comprehensive sanctions, unilateral coercive measures, and freedom of opinion.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Duhan. What's your assessment of the effect of U.S. unilateral sanctions on the people of these nations?
Well, unfortunately, when it comes to the use of unilateral sanctions, people are affected. Usually, the whole population of the country is affected quite broadly, especially in the health area. So, situation in Iran is not so bad as it some other countries being under unilateral sanctions, in a view of the fact that Iran is producing more than 90% of its medicine domestically. We need to take into account, however, that even when the country is producing the medicine domestically, people which are in need of this medicine may still be affected. Take into account that countries need to import raw materials for the medicine. And unfortunately, with the use of unilateral sanctions, especially the comprehensive unilateral sanctions towards Iran, many producers of raw materials are very much reluctant to sell raw materials to Iran. There are problems with delivery and payment. There is a need to use alternative means for payments and delivery. And therefore, it's very complicated to guarantee necessary quality of raw materials.
Well, you talked about the restrictions and the difficulties. What can be done about this situation?
I received information about this situation a few months ago, and I have drafted a communication to the company and to Sweden asking for the assistance on that situation. And unfortunately, the responses which I received unofficially were demonstrating the concerns of the company to be subjected to the sanctions of the United States from one side because of getting money from Iran. Secondly, there were concerns about the ways to get payment from Iran and the ways to deliver these bandages from Sweden to Iran. Previous time, that was UNICEF, which directly engaged into negotiations with Sweden, which resulted in the possibility to deliver the year storage of bandages. Unfortunately, the storage will be over around September this year. And now UNICEF is cooperating again with Sweden and the company trying to deliver these bandages to the EB patients. Unfortunately, as I have said, that's an ad hoc solution. After coming back from Iran, I also had a meeting with the ambassador of Sweden, and we discussed this situation, and I pointed out that the ad hoc solution is not a solution for the problem. People shall not leave not knowing whether they will be able to get the bandages tomorrow or in a year or not, and what caused them suffering and naturally deteriorate their quality of life. So I asked them to get engaged with the company and to guarantee the unimpeded procurement of this medicine.
What is it going to take to resolve this? once and for all?
So the very first step, what the United Nations did, it established this mandate. So basically that was a response to the use of unilateral sanctions and plus to the humanitarian impact unilateral sanctions do. So as I have mentioned, I tried to raise awareness to show specific evidences of humanitarian impact, because what I often face in my work is when I start to talk to the embassies of the countries in which the companies producing the unique equipment are registered, they say, oh, we didn't know, we didn't realize that people are suffering that much and that people are dying. So that was the very first step of the activity of the United Nations. Again, when we are speaking about the short-term solutions, the UN agencies in the countries, and in particular, I speak about a number of specialized agencies in Iran, are very actively engaging now to guarantee the delivery of the basic medical goods necessary for the survival of the people. For example, UNICEF in Iran is very actively engaging to procure the bandages to the EB patients and to procure some other necessary medical equipment for people suffering from severe diseases. However, we need to realize that that's ad hoc solutions, trying to handle the situation for a very short period for a very limited group of people. Around a month ago, me together with some other special rapporteurs have issued a press release calling for a total lifting of unilateral sanctions imposed over critical infrastructure, medical goods, without any need to get extra licenses. Because today, unfortunately, something what has been announced to be called humanitarian exceptions is not functioning at all. It's necessary to get a license. It's necessary to find a way how to transfer money, how to guarantee the delivery. When we speak about EB patients in Iran, the recent attempt of UNICEF to deliver a little bit more than a year storage of bandages for EB patient took a year and a half. And today they are trying to engage into delivery of the second delivery. At the same time, I believe that the United Nations shall guarantee that this means all sorts of critical goods are exempted from the use of unilateral sanctions, first of all. In the long-term perspective, I try now to engage with many UN institutions as well as with states and humanitarian actors and scholars to bring attention to the issue of legality. If states will stop to use illegal means, that will mean that we won't need to have the notion what is called humanitarian exception, because sanctions will not be imposed and the states will be able to guarantee the delivery of life-saving medicine.
Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Dr. Elena Duhani. Now, Iran's EB patients have only a few months' worth of special bandages left. They don't know if and when they can receive the next shipment. Many are too young to even understand what sanctions are, and others can't see why their treatment should have anything to do with politics and sanctions against Iran, which are deemed illegal by international standards. Plus, it's not only EB patients who are suffering as a result of these sanctions. All patients whose required medicine and treatment are not entirely made in Iran are affected by these multifaceted sanctions. Now, this leaves Iran's doctors no choice but to either find a way to get around the sanctions or to tell their patients, sorry, I don't think that you will make it. Isn't it ironic, though, that these sanctions are placed on Iran by the U.S., which claims to be the flag bearer of human rights, when in reality, Washington has one of the worst records of waging wars against various nations, using their government's violation of these same rights as an excuse. And now the war is on. The U.S. government against special needs patients in sanctioned countries. Will the special needs patients win this battle and be able to heal their wounds, or will the U.S. manage to cause them to die in agony? Either way, these innocent patients will be the only victors in this cowardly war. Until next week, when we come to you to shed light on a whole other set of Hidden Files. Goodbye for me, Marzia Hashemi, and from the whole crew right here in the studio.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. One of the keys of success of life is becoming and being extremely nice to our parents. Our parents, they come right after Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah says, worship me and be nice to your parents. 4 times in the Quran. I don't know how many times Allah has to say it to make this point very clear. If one ayah is not enough, 4. Now, when it comes to our parents, sometimes we don't become nice to them or we become rude to them. And that's due to ignorance in who they are and their status. That's why you see the Quran and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala constantly mentions to us the merits, the status, and the importance of parents. So unless we get to know our parents very well and get to understand who they are, we won't give them their right, their due right. So let's look at some of the ahadith and see how the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam picture parents for us. And obviously this is a very long topic. I mean, if, you know, we need hours and hours to talk about this. But with the time we have to really make it short and rely on you to do the rest of the search. Risalat al-Huquq, Treatise of Rights for Al-Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn as-Sajjad salamullah alayhi. He talks about the right of the mother, and he does it in a beautiful way, where he doesn't go around saying Allah wants this, Allah wants that. Rather, he tries to draw our attention to what our mothers have went through. So listen to this. He says, وَأَمَّا حَقُّ أُمِّكَ. As for the right of your mother, she carried you where no one would carry anyone else. I mean, 9 months, my mother carried me. She carried you as well. Imagine if I give you a kilo of apples and I say, well, here's a kilo of apples. Actually, you know what? Make it 250 grams. And I'm saying, put it on your back for 9 months. Keep carrying it. Wouldn't you get bored? Wouldn't you get tired? Wouldn't you get annoyed? But your mother never did that. She was happy carrying you for 9 months. And then he says, وَأَعْطَتْكَ مِنْ ثَمَرَةِ قَلْبِهَا مَا لَمْ يُعْطِ أَحَدٌ أَحَدًا. And she gave you the fruits of her heart, meaning she gave you her blood, she gave you her food, she gave you her vitamins, she gave you everything that her body generates. You, as a leech, suck it out of her body. And we do that with our mothers. What do we do in return for them? Nothing. And he says, وَوَقَتْكَ بِجَمِيعِ جَوَارِحِهَا. And she protected you with all her body parts, with all her limbs, hands, face, legs, everything she did inside her womb. She protected you. She made sure that no harm comes to you. And also, when you are born, she's constantly doing what? Protecting you as well. So she's gone through all of this pain and suffering just for my sake and your sake. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ این قصاب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم سواب داره. دعا هم داره، سواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داره این دقیقه ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدر گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون این هم همون امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. So we're speaking about the rights of the mother here. Then the Imam alayhi salam continues and he says, وَلَمْ تُبَالِي أَن تَجُوعَ وَتُطْعِمُكَ. And she did not care as long as she feeds you and she stays hungry. So if a mother has a choice between starving herself to death or feeding her kids. So she has food and she has a choice. You can feed yourself or you can starve to death and give the food to your kids. She will choose her kids over her. That's how the mothers work. And he says, وَتَعْطُشُ وَتَسْقِيكَ. And the same thing when it comes to water, she would rather feed you water and deprive herself and become thirsty. وَتَعْرَى وَتَكْسُكَ. She would rather you have clothes and she stays bare without clothes and suffer the heat of the day or the coldness of the air just for your sake. وَتَضْحَى وَتَضُلُّكَ. And she would rather be in the sun while she shades you. وَتَحْجُرَ النَّوْمَ لِأَجْلِكَ. And she would deprive herself of sleep for your sake. Especially when a kid is born, a child is born, for the first few months, at least first 2 years, babies keep crying day and night. She wakes up, she carries a child, she feeds a child, she carries him, she walks with him, and she's deprived of sleep. And we see that just for our sake. And she protected you from heat and coldness. And then, فَإِنَّكَ لَا تَطِيقُ شُكْرَهَا. Surely you will not be able to thank her. And that's the punchline here. If you want to really serve your mother the way she is meant to be served, then you have to go to Allah and plead with Allah day and night, oh Allah, give me the pleasure, the tawfiq, to be nice to my mom, to be kind to my mom, to repay her for what she did. So you see that Imam alayhi salam started this entire rite by just reminding you of the pain and suffering that she went through just for your sake. Now, how should we repay our mothers after all they went through? From day one until we're born. And as we grow older, their love remains the same. Their care remains the same. Nothing changes. Despite how rude, despite how bad we are to them, they still maintain their niceness to us. So as sons, as daughters, as children, we have to show our parents, especially the mother, the most extreme respect, if I can say the least. A man came to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and said, Ya Rasulullah, I have an old mother. She can't eat, she can't move, she can't do anything. I feed her, I clothe her, I bathe her. In fact, I carry her on my back, I take her here, I bring her there. Have I done my duty? Have I done my haq towards her? Have I done what's required by me towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when it comes to my mother? And the Prophet looked at him, and with cold blood, he said to him, no. What she did is nothing compared to what your mother did for you. So you bathe her, and you wash her, and you carry her on your back, and you think that that's it. Look at how much she had to go through herself just to bring you to this life, just to make sure that you're safe and sound. So you have to be really nice to your parents. Go out of your way for the sake of your parents. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
The Limelight.
Julian Assange's supporters in the Australian Parliament have asked the US government to get him the hell out of a maximum security prison in London, regardless of diplomatic friction over the WikiLeaks founder's eventual fate. We take a look at some of the World Press and Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Associated Press news agency has covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has pushed back at the Australian government's calls to end the pursuit of Julian Assange, insisting that the WikiLeaks founder is alleged to have risked very serious harm to our national security. After high-level talks in Brisbane, largely focused on military cooperation, Antony Blinken confirmed that the Australian government had raised the case with the United States on multiple occasions and claimed he understood the concerns and views of Australians. But he pointedly added that it was very important that our friends here in Australia understood the US concerns about Assange's alleged role in one of the largest compromises of classified information in the history of our country. The key announcements after the meeting on Saturday, 29th of July, included that the US would increase the tempo of visits of nuclear-powered submarines to Australia. The United States also plans to step up rotations of maritime patrol and reconnaissance aircraft and introduce new rotations of US Army watercraft, while pledging to help Australia to start domestic manufacturing of missiles within 2 years. The US assured the Australian government about the attempts to secure congressional support for the AUKUS deal remained on track, even as some Republicans pushed for greater funding for US production. But Antony Blinken's defense of the US allegations against Julian Assange will be seen as a blow to the campaign to free the Australian citizen. Julian Assange remains in Belmarsh Prison in London as he fights a US attempt to extradite him to face accusations in connection with the publication of hundreds of thousands of leaked documents about the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, as well as diplomatic cables. The Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong confirmed she had raised the case of Julian Assange with the US government. At a joint press conference alongside Antony Blinken, Penny Wong said, "We have made clear our view that Assange's case has dragged for far too long and our desire that it be brought to a conclusion, and we've said that publicly, and you would anticipate that that reflects also the position that we articulate in private." However, the Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong added that there were limits to what could be achieved in talks between governments until Assange processes have concluded. Antony Blinken, speaking second, told reporters that as a general matter of policy, the US did not comment on extradition proceedings. He said, "The US Department of Justice has indicated that Assange was charged with very serious criminal conduct," Antony Blinken claimed. "The actions that he has alleged to have committed risk very serious harm to our national security, to the benefits of our adversaries, and put named human sources at grave risk of physical harm, and grave risk of detention." Blinken added, "So I say that only because, just as we understand sensitivities here, it's important that our friends understand sensitivities in the United States." Julian Assange's brother, Gabriel Shipton, said it was now up to the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, to put Australians' views in front of the President himself during a forthcoming visit to the United States. Assange's brother, Gabriel Shipton, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken's snub to Australians demanding Julian's freedom cuts deeper, knowing the American who alleged leaked the information has been free since 2017. The former US military analyst Chelsea Manning's sentence was commuted by the Obama administration in 2017. An advisor to the Australian Assange campaign, Greg Barnes, also responded to Antony Blinken's comments. Greg Barnes said Blinken needs to understand the overwhelming view of Australians, which is that enough is enough. Julian Assange must be released immediately and be able to rejoin his family. Australian federal politicians from across the political spectrum wrote to the US Attorney General Merrick Garland back in April to argue the case set a dangerous precedent for press freedom and would damage the reputation of the United States. The 48 MPs and senators, including 13 from the governing Labour Party, said the accusations, which include 17 counts under the Espionage Act and one count under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act pertain to Julian Assange's actions as a journalist and publisher in publishing information with evidence of war crimes, corruption, and human rights abuses. The Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance has argued the prosecution of Julian Assange imperils journalism everywhere and undermines the United States' reputation as a so-called safe place for press freedom. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong were joined by US Defence Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Australian Defence Minister Richard Marles for annual talks in Brisbane known as AUSMIN. As dozens of Republicans in the US Senate flexed their muscle on AUKUS legislation on Capitol Hill demanding extra funds to boost US domestic production, the Australian Defence Minister Richard Marles said he and Penny Wong were both legislators and very much understand the heat and light that comes with the passage of legislation. Richard Marles said, "We're absolutely assured by Tony and Lloyd, but also, in fact, by the efforts that we've undertaken ourselves in speaking with those on the Capitol Hill, that there is a bipartisan commitment to Australia acquiring the capability to operate nuclear-powered submarines." Lloyd Austin defended the adequacy of the US level of investment into its own submarine production, but did not rule out considering an increase in funds. "We will continue to make sure that all pieces are in place as we proceed," he said. The US had committed to help Australia produce guided missile launch rocket systems, or GMLRS, by 2025. Meanwhile, Julian Assange's supporters in the Australian Parliament have asked the US government to get him the hell out of a maximum security prison, regardless of diplomatic friction over the WikiLeaks founder's eventual fate. The Australian citizen remains in Belmarsh Prison in London as he fights a US attempt to extradite him to face charges in connection with the publication of hundreds of thousands of leaked documents about the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, as well as diplomatic cables. Labour MP Julian Hill, a member of the Bring Julian Assange Home parliamentary group, said he had a fundamentally different view of the substance of the matter than Secretary Antony Blinken expressed. Julian Hill said on Monday, 31st of July, "In the same vein, I would say back to the United States, at the very least, take Julian Assange's health issues seriously and going to court in the United Kingdom and get him the hell out of a maximum security prison where he's at risk of dying without medical care if he has another stroke." Labour MP Julian Hill, who said recently no one would think less of Julian Assange if he struck a plea deal, added that improving the prison conditions should not be difficult to do, even while argument continues about resolution of this matter.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.